Welcome back to DMnastics, the gym for dungeon masters to work out their minds. I'm DM Neil, aka Jotmaniac, and with me this time is
DM JM Perkins, aka John Perkins.
The person with a wonderful Kickstarter that is at this time wildly successful and even more successful when you're hearing it. So you should stick around after we give you great ideas to hear even more about that.
Well, thank you for that plug. Yeah, I'm super excited to talk about that. But First, I'm super excited to work out with DMs.
Yes. So we've pre-plugged. So for this one, we're going to tie back to episode number 68, Combat Expertise. There's no guest for the episode, which, hey, that's fine. DM Mitch and Chris, they're awesome. So it's like they're guesting every time. And this one is going to also look at DMnastics number 56, Siege of the Beast.
Very cool.
So for this one, a quick explanation. It gets really meta sometimes when I do these, and I understand that. So if you'll track with me, DMnastics 47 was the improv one that eventually James D'Amato jumped on and graced me with his presence, because he is amazing.
And doesn't sleep.
Yeah, yes. Then we talked about after the battle for Lucina Tyrion, but this is focusing more on the battle itself. And there were slight hints at it in DMnastics 47. So this is going to really hone it in, and we're going to take a crack at figuring out why Lucina Tyrion was attacked and what were all the awesome things that happened around it. And hopefully some of these ideas you can take and put into your game. Like if you have, it makes me think of Fight Club. I just had to destroy something beautiful.
Well, you know, that's the central DM trick, is get your players to care about something and then do horrible things to that thing.
Yep.
Yeah. In this case, they hopefully care about the town, and now horrible things are happening to it.
Yeah. That's how I feel every time I watch The Walking Dead. I'm like, ooh, starting to get real okay for you. Something bad's coming.
Yeah. Well, and also, it's their own fault for having, like, 20 cabbage vendors.
There it was. That's the root of all evil. Too many cabbage vendors. Mm-hmm. All right, so this one will be a little bit different. So we're going to just jump right into lifting the proverbial mental weights. And with that, we'll do it right now.
Cool. All right, so we had the setup. So one of the first things we wanted to figure out was who are the enemy combatants? And we looked through the forums, and I really liked orcs, ogres, manticores, bugbears, and goblins. Mm-hmm. Love the classic.
I mean, like, that's the classic horde, the enemy horde. Like, if you go look up art, like, fantasy horde, like, you're probably going to find that mix of monsters right there.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they're classics for a reason, and you got the manticores in there for something a little bit spicier. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, just because I had to reference to make sure, a manticore is a flying lion scorpion, basically.
Yes. Terrifying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Super creepy. And of course, it immediately adds that element of flight, which that's definitely mixes it up. Because then I know I've said it on the podcast before, but I'll say it again. The number one thing that you can do to mess with your players and get them to think in a different way is add a vertical element. Because we're looking at everything horizontally. The second you add a vertical element, they are on their toes and paying a lot more attention.
Mm-hmm.
So we have done that here.
Oh, yeah. We got classic threat. We got some spiciness with the manticores. I thought it was a great suggestion. As far as who's leading them, what do you think?
So we had kicked around some ideas, and we settled on, again, that villain that is doing something that they believe in, not just for the sake of tyranny or chaos or anything like that. So they're actually going to be led by an elf.
An elven wizard, I believe we decided.
Yes, definitely. And that should probably throw your players for another loop and question, like, why would there be an elven wizard leading this horde?
Right, which is a great question. And what we thought is that this elven wizard had a lever, who was also a wizard, and that lever was taken to the center of this town centuries ago and has had the magical secrets ripped out of his head or her head for centuries. And so that's kind of the basis of this mage circle. That's how they're so powerful. And that is who this elven warlord wizard is trying to recover. They're doing it for the love.
Yep. And it essentially, like, kind of the lore that we had built around it is that they needed the time. Like, the person had figured out where their lover was, but they needed the time to amass an army large enough and strong enough to even attempt to try and get their lover back.
It took them a long time to find them. I think we can make it a little bit more tragic in that they thought their lover had abandoned them, but of course had been abducted without their knowing, and powerful magic prevented that discovery. And they only recently found out and in their rage conquered a bunch of tribes of monsters and is now leading the combined horde against this town.
And the reason that they found out is because the magical secret that was ripped out of their lover's head was then used to help build the wall that it goes around Lucina Tyrion.
Oh, I like that. I like that. They see their lover's signature in the construction of this thing.
Yeah, so as people may or may not know, Lucina Tyrion, there's a mage tower on top of a devil's peak. Google it. It's awesome. And there's a circular wall that constantly moves. So it is a defensive structure in that the doorway to go into the town will only line up at certain times in a day. And so then that is both through magic and mechanical means. And then the lover has figured out that there is no way that it wasn't those magical secrets that were pulled out.
Okay, and so then the next question, of course, is what tactics are they using? So I totally see the main force waiting for these gates to line up. But in the meantime, they are using some interesting tactics to try to break up the defenders, knock people off the walls, get the hail of arrows come down. And someone suggested, let's see, goblins via catapults. Yeah. They suggested manticore aerial incursions. And these like just massive siege machines led by ogres, just waiting to batter down the gate when it's finally in place.
Yeah. I love the idea because it had said that they would catapult goblins over, most likely armed with fire and explosives. And I can just essentially see like strapped with like kind of the dead man's switch vest flying over the wall and trying to find where they could do the most damage and then letting it go.
Right. I actually see like they netted like 50 goblins together in like a goblin boulder. And so they're all angry and snarling at each other and scratching and biting. And then that kind of just like plops and explodes onto the city streets. And then there's a burst of 50 goblins.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone who can draw, please make that happen.
Oh, yeah. Just like, it's the goblin hugapult is what that is. It's the only time goblins hug.
Okay, guys, this is our one time. Boom.
Right. All right, cool. And I really love that idea.
Well, and the other idea that kind of came with that was that you can, because the town itself is so defensible based on the wall moving around, this is a great way to have smaller groups that are manageable by the players while still having a larger threat.
Right, exactly. So they feel like they're contributing something by taking care of these, you know, strike forces, but they're not being overwhelmed by the army, and you still present the army as this overwhelming threat that they aren't going to be able to outfight.
Yep. And this is kind of going back to the reason they are attacking. We also had come up with the idea that, you know, this person that is looking for their lover is an extremely powerful wizard of their in their own right. And then there's just this almost spectral image that goes over the town and say, essentially is like almost apologizing. Like, I'm sorry that I have to do this, but this is what the people who ran your town have wrought on you, and I'm going to do it.
Right, exactly. And that the horde will need to feed. But it isn't about that.
Yes.
It's about you being sold out by your hidden lords. All right, so here's how I picture this. Is you got the player characters running around. They're helping rally forces. They're dealing with these incursions by manticores and these goblins that are catapulting over the walls. And finally, the captain of the watch says, okay, we're ready to go call the mage circle. We need help. They need to be out here. The gate's about to be in position. Now is the time. They said they were preparing a ritual for us. They said they have a portal set up for evacuation. Go check and see what's going on. So the party goes to the mage circle, and this would be another secret revealed. And when they get to the tower, the mages aren't there.
They are gone. Yep. It is completely empty. And this is another thing I had thought. The belief was that it was the mages themselves that were powering the wall. Because again, both mechanical and magical to make a wall do that, of course. But it is in fact something that they had just set up. Almost like a power crystal or something, like, you know, some sort of magical power source, so that it's not dependent on them. And so now they've left, and now the players are just left to decide what's next.
Yep. Here's the way out for them that I like. You could, of course, do underground tunnels. You could have them cutting a swath through the enemy. But I really like to, again, really threaten and do terrible things to this place that the players hopefully care about. And so I really like the idea of somehow they have some manner to knock over this tower at the center of the city, and that will crash through the walls on the opposite side of the gates. That will give the players and the city a way to evacuate just as the monsters are coming in. Because they, of course, have all amassed in the front waiting for the gate to be in position.
Okay, and I wouldn't want to speak, and so I came up with an idea, but I definitely wouldn't want to speak to, well, I guess we might have to. I wouldn't want to speak too much for the players and take away too much player agency, but I think a great way would be to essentially move that power source to the opposing side, like the side that it needs to be on, and then get it to explode, and then the tower will topple the direction that they want it to, knocking the wall out, and then they'll have a way to escape the town.
Right. And this is good lifting because I actually don't have any good ideas on how you could signal to the players that this is an option.
Ooh, okay. So an idea for that would be that the abuse that the wall is taking in the system that's in place due to the armies trying to run siege towers up onto it, attempting to throw this, that, and the other at it, because that's a very brutish, not necessarily the most intelligent army. They're just throwing their might at the wall. The power source itself is starting to spark, sputter, and appears as if it is in a state of disarray.
I like that.
Potentially tipping the hand that maybe we could push this even farther to blow up.
I like that a lot. But yeah, I like this scenario ending with they've found out something about this elf wizard who makes him both relatable and someone they might need to fight. They found out things that they really may be pissed off about the mage circle. They have a chance of escape, but we also like the idea, and let's see who's what it was. It was...
Goodmush.
Yes, Goodmush. He was talking about rescuing prisoners, VIP treasure, etc. I like this ending with an evacuation, and the player characters are really going to be making decisions about who they save, who they go back for, how much time they give, and what their priorities are. Because I think that's a great way to give them agency and make their choices matter.
Yeah, what is the most important thing in Lucina Tyrion? Is it the people? Is it the knowledge? Or is it some sort of item? I mean, tons of player agency that you can... And that's definitely a place where I wouldn't... As much as we kind of heavy-handed the idea of the tower falling, I would almost very, very hands-off on that next piece.
Oh, yeah. No, I think we always want to avoid railroading, if railroading means denying player agency. But at the same time, you kind of have to orchestrate to set pieces, at least the way I generally GM. And then after that, you get to that set piece, watch what the players do and give that agency back if you've had to kind of nudge them in one direction. Yeah. So if you do a big set piece, you're like, I really want this scene. I think it works thematically and visually. I really like it. I really think that's a good switch to do that and then immediately go, okay, what do you do?
Yeah, and it would be interesting discussions within the players as their characters as well. And I feel because you need to present things like this to help. Well, and okay, this is just how I feel. You need to present things like this to help your players establish who their characters are.
Of course.
Because if it is really just the murder hobo, then it's just you rolling enough dice to beat the other person. But if you putting moral dilemmas and things like this, then it helps them figure out who they want to be as a character. And that is always awesome because that helps you then figure out how to have a more engaging story.
Definitely. And I think that the way we've set this up, you give so much space for the characters to reveal who they are. How do they react to this elven warlord? How do they act to the mage circle who, you know, apparently have betrayed them? How do they react to potentially having a refugee population that's going to be in dangerous territory? How do they make these choices?
Yeah. Amazing. We've done it, sir. We have done it. We have lifted the mental weights. And like I said, hopefully some of this you can take and use with or against, however you approach that DM screen, with or against your players.
Oh, yeah. Something I always love is giving the villain something relatable.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they're leading an army of darkness, they kind of have a relatable reason. I would do really terrible things if people abducted my wife.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm right there with you. I mean, look at Liam Neeson. Granted, I don't know why his family gets stolen so much. Like, that's a whole other conversation we could probably have. But they do. And the things he does to get him back.
True. And you have to resist the urge to name the elven warlord Neeson Liam.
Oh, I don't know if I can. Now that you've presented to me, I don't know if there's any other option.
You have to avoid as best you can, and I know it might be impossible, doing the speech when he's appearing, when he or she's appearing in spectral form above the city.
Oh, well, I mean, it's a given now. If anything, I'm going to get that clip, I'm going to toss it into Audition, and I'm going to tweak the sound so it sounds like it's an elvish wizard that's saying those things.
Many skills of his long over his long career as a wizard that makes him a nightmare for people like you.
Yes. That's amazing. Okay, with that, and as awesome as that was, I want to discuss something even more awesome, and that is the Salt and Wounds Kickstarter that you're doing, sir.
Yeah. Well, hey, thank you so much for bringing it up. So I'll give you the elevator pitch. So Salt and Loons is my campaign setting. It's currently running Kickstarter. It'll probably be different by the time you hear this, but at the time of recording, we're 480% funded, which I'm mind-blowing to me. I'm so happy. But the pitch for it is this is a city that is fed and powered by the perpetual butchery of the Bound Tarrasque, which is at the core of Salt and Loons. So 200 years ago, they fought the Tarrasque. They couldn't kill it. They managed to bind it in place. They were trying to figure out a way to kill it. And in the meantime, as they were starving, they decided to start eating it. And then that's 200 years have passed. And this whole city, who has an alien culture and economy and all this assorted weirdness, has grown up around this central conceit.
Yeah, and to if you want to immediately know more information about how that works, this is a reverse almost self-plug, and I don't intend it to be that because I want to shed light on how great this Kickstarter is, but you can go over to the GM Showcase and you can listen to a game played in the Salt and Moon setting.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. And it was a lot of fun to play that game. Yeah. Thank you so much for bringing it up. I'm super happy about this. And it's been so much fun to write. I've been writing it since early 2015. We did that actual play with the GM Showcase crew. Had a ton of fun. And yeah, it's a great way to learn. Also, it has its own website, which is www.saltmoonsetting.com. But if you want to learn more, the easiest way is just Google, or rather do a search in Kickstarter for Salt Moons.
Definitely. And like was already mentioned, it's almost to 490% funded, and I assume this will sound ridiculous too, a measly $6,000 away from an Adventure Path stretch goal.
Yeah. Which I'm super excited to begin writing.
Which you totally should, because I assume at the time of this recording, it will have already surpassed that. And that will probably mean that you'll have to write an adventure path. I would wager all three of these. But
yeah,
we'll have to see.
We will definitely see. And what's cool is I was actually able to basically run what I wanted out of the adventure path with some of my high-end Patreon backers. Because I did the setting via Patreon for a long time before I did the Kickstarter. And so I actually have run most of the adventure path I would write, but of course the difficulty or the work is turning my notes and, you know, my kind of chicken scratch version of adventure path into an actual thing that other GMs could run, not just me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're turning random papers into something that's meaningful, but you know.
Yes, but I actually have some experience doing this stuff. I've written most of the other supplements, and yeah, I'm really excited that this is going to be the thing I work on for at least the next year.
Yes. So with that, everyone, like, again, go to Kickstarter, type in Salt and Loons, go check out all the stretch goals that have already been blasted through and all the awesome stuff that you're going to get, all the awesome stuff that I'm going to get because I've already backed it. So there's that.
Was this all a con to make sure that you get the adventure path? It's the only reason you have me on.
Oh yeah, that's all I wanted. It's total selfish. I don't care about anything else. I just really wanted an adventure path. Now I'm just trying to push it. Everyone, go get me the thing I need. And
I'm okay with your kind of pushing, sir.
Okay, done. Well, if I know you've already mentioned it, but if people wanted to hear more from you, where could they go to find that info?
Oh, yeah. So, of course, the Salt and Loons Kickstarter is the best place to go. I'd love your attention on that if you have a moment. But you can find links to all my work at jmperkins.com.
Done. There you go. And if you want to follow me, you can do so at JokeManiac on Twitter. If you want to follow the official DMnastics Twitter account, where we have daily DMnastics from none other than DM Main Prize and a special Weekend Warriors DMnastic from me, you can do so at DMnastics on Twitter. If 140 characters isn't your deal and you want to send us some more, just go ahead and do so by sending an email to dmnastics@gmail.com. And for everything else on the wonderful Block Party Podcast Network, just go to blockpartypodcastnetwork.com. And with that, I will just implore the listeners to join up on the forums as well and take part in these challenges and exercises as well as the other conversations being had.
Head over to dungeonmastersblock.freeforums.net and try some DMnastics so your players don't ask, do you even lift?
Oh, I could barely lift my right arm because I did so many. I don't know if you heard me counting. I did over 1,000. Just watch out for the guns. They'll get you.